Pacers fans, bowl season is here and it's time to get in on the action with MyBookie. Are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? Sign up for MyBookie.ag today and get paid fast when you win. MyBookie is your hookup for all your betting needs. You can even use Bitcoin now. That's crazy. Basically now, use the promo code LOCKEDON. You get a 50% match to your deposit, a 50% match when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. You can use this for bowl season betting, for NBA betting, for NFL playoff betting, anything you want to bet, you could do on mybookie.ag. If I were you, I'd be looking at over lines for the NFL playoffs weekend. I'd be looking at over-unders for NBA games. I'd be looking at NBA future odds, things like that, all kinds of stuff. There's all kinds of things you can bet on mybookie.ag. And if you play today, you can play, you can win, and you can get paid right away. Use the promo code LOCKEDON when you go to mybookie.ag and get a 50% bonus with your first deposit. Use the promo code LOCKEDON on mybookie.ag.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I am one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. And joining me on the other line for our now mid-season, we are halfway through the season, 41 games in, is my other co-host, Tony East. He now has a new title. Is he Community West, Westfield Community West Paper, something like that? He's co-expert at 8.8 Seconds. I lose track. He changes it every few weeks. So whatever he is, he's doing a lot of writing.
I am doing a lot of writing, especially about the Pacers. So keep following my stuff.
Yeah, so we're going to, on this podcast, we're going to do a quick recap of the Heat game, then do some midseason. I have some questions again, like we did for the quarter season game, and then we're going to preview the Suns. Or the Suns and Cavs games coming up. And then also later this week, Tony will have a preview of both the Cavs and Suns. You going to practice again on Friday?
Tomorrow. The game's on Friday against the Cavs. But I'll try to go tomorrow. Depends on what happens at work.
Yeah, all right. So he'll be doing kind of, he's similar to his Tuesday show yesterday, or Tuesday or Wednesday. Wednesday show. Sorry, yep. I lose track of the days when I'm not in school anymore. And it's like every day is a weekend. Where he'll mix some sound from practice and mix some of his own takes. So let's get to the Heat review. So the Pacers lost this one 114-106. The game of, they couldn't make a three.
My goodness.
They hit one three. They hit, Darren Collison hit a almost three to end the,
I thought it was a three. Quarter. I didn't realize it was a two until after.
I did when they said on the broadcast, but it was pretty, they didn't have Miles Turner because he has an elbow injury. It looks pretty serious because he's wearing some kind of brace on his elbow. So I don't, I mean, they said he's going to miss the next two games. So I don't, at least. So I would guess he's probably going to miss the entire West Coast swing. Sabonis got to play, which was good. He has been looking solid over now almost 2 weeks of playing pretty good basketball. He had 18 points, another good night, I think, at the past two times. I think he had 17 against the Bucks and then 24 and 22. So nice little run by him there. Oladipo went back to his 25-point game ways, but it was really just nobody could hit a three. That was basically the story of the game, right? Bojan and Vic combined 0 for 10 from three.
Yeah. Bojan, Vic, and Corey combined 0 for 13. I mean, it was just crazy. So, like, even a lot of them were, the first half, they were 0 for 7, and a lot of those weren't good looks. And I was like, man, the Heat are playing really good perimeter defense. And then the second half, they finally got good looks, and they just couldn't make them. None of them were going in.
Yeah, it got to the point where I think they actually stopped like trying the three. Like it looked like at times Bojan would get the ball on the perimeter and he would try to go to the lane, or same with Vic, because they just knew they couldn't hit it for some reason. And I don't know whether it was like an off day, usually at home you don't see a team go 1-for-18 from three at home. You know, that's the thing that happens on like the third game in four nights in a road game in the middle of the West Coast swing, not on a game where you basically played like 20 minutes against the Bucks because you blew them out and then stay at home and play the Heat. It just seemed off all game.
Yeah, and like all the things that would point to them winning were there, right? They won the rebounding battle. They won the turnover battle. They scored so well in the paint, but they just couldn't defend the paint very well because of no Turner, and they couldn't hit a three, and that's why they lost. And it's weird because the way the Heat play, this isn't weird, right? Like the Heat are really good at guarding the perimeter, and they're really good at forcing you to, shoot tougher shots. At the same time, they're really good at hitting the three. They're pretty good into the analytics ball. So it's not like anything unexpected with Turner out. It just is like shocking to see it actually happen.
Yeah, and the Pacers had their opportunities despite shooting so terrible from three. They, in the fourth quarter, cut it to one a couple times with
– It was tied.
With less than two – it was tied at 97, but then the Heat came back and made a three right away. So it was kind of a short-lived tie, but – They were still down three with under a minute left until that Wayne Ellington bounce in that that was just lucky. I mean, I watched the play and said that's just a good shot. I mean, Corey Joseph was up on him pretty well, forced him to shoot it clearly off the back end of the rim, but it just took a really nice roll off the glass and went in. I don't know if this is that terrible of a loss for the Pacers. They look pretty good. I think it's bad they shot so bad from three, but it's also a positive sign that they were able to overcome that pretty well and almost win this game.
Yeah, the only reason I would say it's annoyingly bad is because the Heat only played eight guys, but they were all really good, like, for different reasons. And the guy that stood out to me, even though his stat line isn't amazing, was Tyler Johnson because, you know, all his threes were just massive, like run-killing threes or, like, tie-breaking threes, and he played really good defense. You know, he really impressed me in this one. He was huge. And then Ellington, of course, just 40% from three, bombing him away all the time. He just changed the whole game. So those two guys off the bench were really the difference makers to me.
Yeah, and I was expecting to see this team get some dead legs in the second half because they played in Toronto last night in that really tight game where they got into a fight at the end of the game and there's a lot of emotions running high. But they seemed to not really – like the back-to-back didn't seem to affect them. And I don't know whether it's just because they're a team from Miami and Miami has some weird health stuff or I don't know what it was. But they didn't show any sign of being really tired like I thought they would show at some point, especially when they're playing so little guys with so many of their guys out. It just – It didn't really make sense, but the Heat played well and they won, and I think that's what you have to kind of take away from the game.
Yeah, the Dragic looked a little tired end of the third, early fourth, but you know, for the majority of the game, the whole team looked really good. So I totally agree with that. With Turner out, we're going to have to get used to seeing Al Jefferson slog around, and they picked on him on defense so much. They had to take him out early in the fourth, which surely made Sabonis tired down the stretch, which is just how it's going to be. You know, maybe they got to try EK or something, but Al was just not good on D at all.
Yeah, I don't know what the fix is. If it's playing Young a little bit of five and making Leaf play the four, I don't know what the fix is without Turner there because we saw it when they play Jefferson. They just can't go fast enough to win games. They just can't get like Jefferson gets a rebound and he has to throw it to somebody to get the ball moving because he can't kind of even push a little bit. And it's just he's kind of dead weight out there. But at least he's making a lot of money, so at least he's getting some use out of his $9.8 million contract.
Well, and he talked at practice to Cliff, and I overheard him talk about how his role more recently, he said he's been, you know, teaching the younger two centers, you know, how to be in the league and offensive skills and things like that, which, you know, that's something you pay him for. But then in games, he just isn't useful at all when his only, you know, he's a one-trick pony scoring in the post and he can't guard anything. So it was tough to watch him tonight, even though, you know, only minus five, but in 17 minutes, that's not very good.
No, it's not. And I'm just trying to think if there's a way that you could try to, I mean, they played 10 guys. So theoretically they don't need to play him if they can just somehow they need more minutes out of TJ Leaf, which I don't know if that's any better on defense. Really.
Exactly.
So it's a predicament and they'll have to overcome it to be honest. Cause they're going to have to, they luckily have a somewhat easier path. Once they get past Cleveland, their West isn't brutal, but they just have to overcome it at this point. And I mean, I would bet money that Vic can kind of overcome that at some point. He himself can score 35 points. It'll be enough to a couple games just to overcome that. But it's they can't shoot one of 18 without Turner because they're not going to win games.
If they do exactly. That rim protection is going to be sorely missed. And it just looks even funnier to read it off the page. But, you know, you can't win a game shooting 5.6% from three.
It's ridiculous. And we'll talk about in the Cleveland preview how big I think Turner is going to – missing Turner for the Cleveland game is going to be really.
Yeah,
I think
that's the biggest one in the upcoming schedule.
That's the one game where I think he's going to be really badly missed. But we're going to stop talking about the game, the Heat-Pacer game, because like it's not that much to talk about from the game. And we're going to move on to our mid-season review. So I have some questions pulled up. Let me see if I can find them. So where do you want to start, Tony? Do you want to start with a check-in on our predictions?
I think we should check in on our predictions. That would be a good place to start.
So I wrote for myself when I was doing a little prep notes for this, I wrote check back in on predictions. I put right on Bojan ? For Adam, right on Lance for ? For Adam, right on Vic for ? For Adam, wrong on record.
Wow. Wow. I'm going to say Bojan had one good month and one bad month. So we can both get a right or we can both get a wrong. You pick. And I would say Lance had one bad month and one good month. So we can both get a right and both get a wrong for that. as well.
Yeah, but hasn't he not played bad since his bad month? Like, he started off kind of bad, but he's played pretty well.
So that's the same as Bojan, just flipped.
No, Bojan played bad, then played well, then played bad again.
He played awesome. His net rating was the highest in October of any month.
No, I know, but November
was his best playing month. October was his best impact month. But December, he was
bad.
I wrote about this today. I wrote about this literally.
But he stunk for the first 10 games.
No, he couldn't hit a three. He was good everywhere else.
Okay, but if he can't hit a three, that's basically what they pay him for. So I don't.
His offensive rating was 123. He was facing the floor and getting to the rim. He was good.
I just remember him being a deficiency that first month, first couple weeks.
That was his best net rating of the season, was that first month. I have the stats.
Are you adding in weeks from November? All right, fine. But he's been so bad recently that I think it's awful.
Recency bias will make Lance look good and Bojan look bad when they're really probably about even.
Bojan shot 0 for 7 from 3 in the game. He had a game where he went 0 for 5, 0 for 7 from the field in a game, in the fifth game of the season against the Thunder. I mean, I get it. He actually had not a terrible start, but.
Like they don't win the Spurs game with Adam. They don't win in Miami when he goes 6 of 10 from 3 with Adam. Like, things like that. They, you know, they just pulled some games out because of his shooting in November.
Well, yeah, no, I'm not downing you. I think I thought his first 2 weeks of the season in November or October were bad. Then he was fine, really great in November, and then he's kind of stunk since then.
He was like, okay. Thought. Yeah, it's kind of when they slowed the game down too, because he's so good at just catching shooting. And when they slow the game down, they don't get that first shot in their offense ever. So he is the big hit from, that's what I wrote about today. He gets the big hit of that because the first shot doesn't go to him as much. And the other thing is that play that worked so well that I was talking about in October, where he'd kind of curl off a screen at the elbow or a little farther out and then drive to the basket. You saw it at least twice tonight. He only scored it once. You know, he was getting 6 shots in the paint a game for that first month and a half, and now it's down to 4. So, you know, with that play gone and the early action shots dwindling for him, he's been way less effective.
Yeah, no, I will agree with you that the fact that the Pacers have played so bad open games, which just screws up their entire offense for about 2.5 quarters sometimes, where they can't get any fast break going, hurts him, because he's the kind of guy where, you know, if he gets his first 2 shots, it's going to make, like, he's going to 8 for 12 that day. He's that kind of player. So I will give you that, but the problem is I don't see where the fix is for it. You know what I mean? Are they going to be able to play faster the next 2 months without Turner, let's say, for another week? I just don't see how he gets back to where he was. That's my only concern.
They could just shoot earlier in the shot clock for him to get back. But we way went off this question. Predictions-wise, too, I think I completely missed on Lance having any sort of moderate impact. I thought he was just going to be awful. And even when he does bad things, he's super entertaining and jazzes the team up. So, you know, good for him.
So he's the 7th man on this team, right? You would say Sabonis is the 6th man, but he's the 7th.
No, Corey's ahead of him.
Corey. Okay, but they're neck and neck. They both do different things that help the team.
Yes.
Okay. Right. I think Sabonis is the 6th man, but
I agree,
because he just, when he starts, he is really effective when he's replaced. But so, what other prediction do we have? Are we win total? We're both off on. We don't need to harp
way
on
off.
That one.
way off.
I think when we say Vic, is that I think we both kind of said this was a possibility at him getting to above 20 points a game, if, you know, best case scenario.
You were higher on the idea than I was.
Yeah, that's true. But, and then I'm trying to think what else. I mean, Turner, we were probably a little off on Turner. He's not been as good on offense as we thought. I think he's just good on defense, but offensively he hasn't gotten to the 18 point mark that we thought he could get to this season.
I was pretty high on Corey Joseph and his defense mostly, which has looked as advertised, but, you know, he hasn't blown anyone out of the water. It's been kind of weird because it's just been Vic is so much better than expected, and that's why the team is where they're at.
Oh, yeah, 100%. This team is above 500 because of Vic. And then I guess Darren Collison, it might be the fact that we both just don't talk about him enough for how effective he is in offense, like setting up the team and stuff like that. We don't like talk about him because we kind of think he has the fifth option on offense, but he's been, I guess, as advertised, right?
He's a really good passer for his height, better than I expected. And he can shoot the open shot. He only shot 4 times against this Heat game, by the way, but he's a good shooter and passer for his height. And he knows the offense better than anybody, but to his detriment, he's so short on defense that it doesn't really work out. But yeah, you know, we kind of got everybody close except for Vic. Vic is so much better than I thought he'd be that's why the record is better than I would have predicted.
Yeah, 100%. This actually kind of leads in. So What's one move the Pacers can make? I have my move, and it relates to Darren Collison in the point guard position. But what's the one move you think the Pacers can make?
Any sort of wing depth, preferably in that 3-4 mold, just because that's always a hard position to get. But, you know, like the perfect guy would be P.J. Tucker, but they can't get P.J. Tucker. So it's getting like someone like P.J. Tucker. I like it. Like if you're going to go like a tiny little move, you go for like a James Ennis. Or if you want to go for maybe a little bigger fish, you know, you do that with a guy like Rodney Magruder, or like we just played Josh Richardson or something like that. That kind of guy would fit in really well to me. And that's what I would want if they were to make a positive move. If they go the negative direction, finding a way or finding someone to give you a young player or a good draft pick for Thad or Collison or Bojan or anyone like that. But, you know, we'll have to see when push comes to shove if they're able to do that.
So can I grill you on this small forward thing real quick?
Yeah.
So I've been looking at who they could get, you know, just kind of scouring through teams' rosters, who's motivated to make trades, who's not, whatever. There aren't actually as many teams you would think that have talented players that are motivated to make trades. You know, the bottom of the league is so bad, there's not really much value on any player. I mean, there are a couple guys on some really bad teams, but there's not a ton. But you name a couple, but like that is really kind of a market improvement on a small forward. Like takes them, like really give them the 3 and D.
Want to improve. I want depth.
But like where small forward wise do they really get significantly better, saying that Glenn Robinson returns? You know what I mean? Is there really anybody out there that says he's better? Like, I think Mirotic is a player that's better, but he has that no trade clause, so he doesn't have to come here, doesn't want to.
But all the Bulls have to do is pick up his team option, and then his no trade clause is gone, and then they can trade him. But
why would maybe they don't want you to do that?
That's how that works. But that doesn't matter. They have all the control. But you know, it's wings are just the most important position to have. And then, you know, you cannot play TJ Leaf as much, or you cannot play Lance as many minutes or something like that if you have another guy in that mold. Plus 3-and-D guys are just so valuable.
But do you not want Lance at this point? I actually not want to play Leaf, but Lance seems like he's kind of the energy for your team at times.
Yeah, you can have energy. He played 24 minutes tonight. You can have energy in less spurts than that.
I don't know. I think some of you're underrating Lance in the factor that the kind of hype he brings to this team. Especially
I said that earlier.
No, I know, but I think you're still underrating that by wanting to get a guy to replace him. I was looking. There's not really a ton of like super quality small forward there that you can get out there. Like there's Evan Fournier, maybe. You know, there's stuff, guys like that, but there's nobody that's like, oh, he's the player you want that can help this team in the future. It's kind of like you're just getting like a tiny bit better for maybe a slight playoff run.
James Ennis is 24.
But how good is he?
He's good.
You know what I mean? Is he really, but is he at a level that's going to like really do much? I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't. You know, I also
acquiring better players makes you better. That's just how it is.
James Ennis is also not 24.
What is he? 26, 25?
27.
You really? Was he that old of a rookie? My bad.
Yeah. And that's also why I did a list of guys under 25 and he didn't come up. And I was really confused when you said 24. Like I kind of made a list of guys under 25 they could get. But I just don't think he's like going to take, like I'm talking about guys that could even kind of take to the next level. And my kind of thought is the Pacers either, you know, they have this cap space that they should either try to go big for a guy, basically. I don't think they should be the salary team, but they should either just go big for somebody or just stay hold, because it's not, I don't think there's anybody out there that's going to be like going to make you gooder or a better team in 2 years, but unless you can go big and use your cap space. So like a Kemba Walker or a Mike Conley, that's kind of thing I'm thinking. I mean, those are two guys that could be available. There aren't really a ton of big name guys available in general, but I think if they're available, you just got to go out and get them, because you can't allure a guy like that in free agency and you have the cap space and the expirings and the things like that to make kind of a really big move.
Yeah, I'm pretty against the star trade at this stage of where the team is, but yeah, I mean, if it's there, I guess, but they'd have to be getting pretty good value for me to be happy with it.
So with Kemba, I think the fact that he brings in that number two guy that you really don't have, you know, we can talk about this later, but the Pacers really don't have a number two guy. They've got Victor Oladipo. They've got a bunch of guys who are kind of can score at times, but clearly can't score without Vic being on the floor. But right. If you have Kemba, you instantly get the number two guy, and Kemba's relatively affordable. You can easily take on one of their bad contracts. You don't have to give up a ton. I mean, I don't think giving up Leaf and their 20th pick next year is like out of this, you know, is going to be a crazy move. But Kemba's the kind of guy who you could at least see being part of like a core in 3 years, because he'll be, I think he's 27 right now, so he'll be 29. But they're just, that's the kind of guy I think they should go after if he's available, because they have this unique opportunity where so many teams are in such bad financial situations, they can take advantage of them to some extent. You know, there's not a lot of teams that can say, oh, we can take on money and we can do this and we can give you expiring deals. You know, a lot of these teams made such bad mistakes 2 years ago. The Pacers kind of did with Jefferson, but they're going to be able to get out of it pretty soon. But so many teams made just terrible financial mistakes. They're going to hold them back for years and screw up the markets for years in the NBA.
Yeah, we'll have to see. Expiring contracts have pretty low value this year just because no one's going to have cap space anyway. So, you know, no one's really going to be able to angle for it. And they're only going to go for it unless they need it. So we'll see how that works out. I am pretty adamantly against a Kemba trade, but I mean, again, if the value's there, do it. But I don't want that. And yeah. I think I know you say he's option two, but he's not going to think that way. And it's going to be a different dynamic. Like Collison works because of the way he plays. Like you need a style like that. And if I got a point guard, I would want like I saw Grant Affsett and Alex Golden talking about this on Twitter. You know, I was talking about a guy in the George Hill mold, but not actually George Hill. And then they said Patrick Beverley, and I thought that was perfect. Like a guy like Patrick Beverley would just be the best fit ever. It's a shame that he's injured and they can't trade for him.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that one. I like Beverley. I think we both agree if Conley is actually healthy and available, you go and get him. But I think that's a pipe dream.
So, I agree.
Just because he is Beverley with scoring, basically. That's what he is. Conley, right?
Yeah, he's a good defender. He's a distributor, and he would fit better on this team than Kemba by far because of that pass first mentality.
I just think as the Pacers go, you can't attract a ton of talent. So going after a guy like Kemba, like you just take the talent of a guy and figure it out in some sense, because you're not going to be able to attract a guy of his level in free agency. You're just not. There's not. And maybe you acquire him and then you trade him in next deadline or you figure something out. But it's just getting that kind of talent for minimal pieces at the time. It's a good value long term, at least.
Yeah, but it would not be in the pieces. It would take a lot to get them. So that's why that's another.
Well, it might not take more than a TJ Leaf and a first round pick, which both could end up not being any good.
It was 20th pick.
I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking of Tim Bontemps' trade. It was literally just taking on Marvin Williams' contract, giving up Jefferson and Collison, and then Leaf in a first round pick.
That was Tim Bontemps, who does not work for a front office.
I know, but that's just a thought. I mean, what do you think it would take then? What do you think it really takes to get Kemba? If they really want to rebuild and they don't want to pay the luxury tax, they would be willing to. That's a way that they can take advantage of a team like that. There are a couple of teams that are like that.
Yeah, they're gonna. They would probably want Sabonis. I'm gonna guess most teams that are gonna, the Pacers are gonna want Sabonis or Turner.
Yeah, no, I think you can't give up either one. No, you can't do
that. I agree.
So, all right, well, let's stop beating the dead horse and move on to my next question then. who's the most important player on this team, not named Victor Oladipo? I know, a tough one, right? I hit hard hitting question right there.
Thad or Turner probably would be my answers. Turner for the defense and Thad for not recently really so much, but he's been hurt with the thigh. He was good tonight, but he's just so consistent and he leads the team in minutes. He's 20. I just said he's injured, but he's hardly ever hurt. That's why he's able to play so much. And if it weren't for his off-ball D, he'd be, you know, pretty good at literally everything. So I'm picking Thad probably is my answer. But Turner, I think Turner has the most talent of any other player probably, but Thad is the most impactful.
That's fair. I'm thinking Darren Collison, actually.
That's I thought about him too.
I've been so mad at Thad for the past 2 weeks. His defense has been iffy at times. He's had a couple of decent games, but he just hasn't like stepped up. He's been Thad Young. He's been the going to get you 15-8, but nothing more than that kind of guy. Like I thought when Vic was hurt, he could go for 20 a couple of nights, but he never really stepped up to that. But Collison has been, I mean, he's probably the most underrated player on this team, but at the same time as he's like one of the main reason the offense has been so good. His spacing, his ability to set up guys has been awesome. You can see it at times on the sideline where he helps the pace get going so incredible, like gets the pace going. Like there was an out of bounds play today where it was a shot clock violation and Collison immediately ran over to get the ball to pass it in because he wants the team to go faster and faster. But then at times he's able to slow it down when the team really needs to. We saw that in the first game, but he, you know, when it's really important, he's able to kind of get the guys to calm down for a second and get the ball in the guys' right hand. And he's also willing to defer and let Joseph play and not seem mad about it. He's not cranky or anything. He's happy to just be playing. So I've been really impressed with Collison.
Yeah, me too. And I think I tweeted this the other day that he's the most underappreciated offensive player by far. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes too. His turnovers are really low. He was the only guy besides Lance, ironically, who played more than 10 minutes and didn't turn over the ball. So you got to like to see that. You know, he just knows where to be, who to give it to, when to shoot, things like that, that, you know, that veteran presence that you need.
Yeah, he's got a career low in turnovers right now, averaging only 1.4 turnovers per game, which is it's impressive. That's been really great. It's been a big reason for this team. All right, so then let's get to best moment of the season. You had best and worst moment, right? That's what you wanted to do.
Yeah, I wanted this question to be best win, worst loss, because I guess best moment, there's like individual moments in games that would get it, like air guitar Lance and things like that would seal it. But I think best moment win-wise, probably either blowing out the Cavs in Cleveland. That's probably number one. But the Spurs also, just because it was a buzzer beater, I think are the two that I would say are the best wins.
All right. So I agree with you on the best win. I think the best moment was when Vic scored like the last 18 points against Denver.
Oh, yeah.
That was just an incredible kind of – that was an incredible week where he had like 30 against every team that week, and he was averaging like 35 points for the month. It was just – it was sort of that like little last little thing that kind of put Vic as like, oh, he's going to be an all-star for sure, and is he going to be an all-NBA player this year?
Right. That Denver
game was the best moment, but the Spurs.
I think the Denver game and the Detroit game, fourth quarters, were the two that you could point to as having the best, like, banker's life is rocking moments of the season.
But I agree that anytime that Spurs win was the kind of where Vic's on the map. Like, it's first time you're like, oh, this guy might be for real. And then that Bulls three. Those were two incredible shots. All
stuck. We just happened to win that game.
Yeah. So I agree with you. Do you want to agree on the worst moment? We probably can agree on the worst loss and worst moment, right?
The worst loss. Do you think we're going to agree on this?
Do you not think this? What's the worst loss and the worst
Mavs
moment?
Mavs at home.
Vic didn't play.
Oh, that's true.
He got hurt right before that game, right?
You're right.
Lance played, and Lance dribbled the ball off his foot to lose the game, I was like, Lance, I'm totally out on you.
I thought that was the worst loss. What the heck do you have? What am I missing? What am I not thinking of?
You're missing the most obvious thing, which is the most sad thing, but I'm glad you blocked it out of your mind.
What is it? What?
That Boston Celtics loss was the absolute worst loss on this planet. They should not have won that game. They should not have ever been in a chance to win the game. But then with 30 seconds left, they should have won the game. And that was the worst moment I've ever honestly seen in a basketball game since LeBron didn't blew past Paul George to win that playoff game.
Yeah, I was thinking of worst loss. That's the worst moment.
That's also a pretty bad loss because you had the best team in the East beat. You had them beat. It was
the Celtics.
Yeah, but the Pacers had them beat. Like it wasn't like Kyrie goes down, you know, Vic hits a shot, and then Kyrie hits a fallback three to win. It was like you had them beat and you blew it. And it sucked. It was terrible.
It was absolutely awful. It was the worst moment. I'm not doubting that. But I don't think it was the worst loss. Like, I don't think losing to the Celtics is so bad.
No, I just think it's the kind of game that your team thinks about when you, let's say they missed the playoffs by a game. It's the kind of game you say, we should have won that game. We'd be in the playoffs.
Now they're only a game ahead of the Sixers too, or a game and a half. So,
yeah. This is not really on our sheet, but where do you see them getting?
They're going to be in the 8 or 9 race, right? Like, who are they going to catch ahead of them? I don't think. I think the Wizards and Heat and Bucks have kind of sealed themselves in a tier above. So then you have 6 teams locked in. So I guess the Pistons they could catch, but it's really them, the Pistons and the Sixers in 7, 8, 9 in some order.
So are we sure the Bucks and Pistons like secure their spot? I agree the Heat and Wizards
I didn't say the Pistons did, but I think the Bucks have, yeah.
Oh, I know, but they were so unimpressive on Monday that I don't know if that coach is pretty awful. And
they were so impressive last week, but Vic didn't play, so who knows?
Yeah.
They have Giannis. They have Giannis, so yes.
Oh, yes.
I'm confident putting them sick.
I do think, though, they could pass the Pistons or the Bucks in the record-wise. I don't think – I mean, if the Pacers –
I think the Knicks are fake. I still think they're fake. And I agree the Sixers are going to be there. It's just about if guys stay healthy and how many games Embiid plays and all
that. Yeah, I was going to say, if Embiid gets hurt, it's over. They're in. But if not, you know, they're going to be fighting with them all season long.
Yeah. Really stinks. At one point, they were the four seed, and now they're now three games back as the four seed, the Miami Heat. So,
yeah.
That's a bummer.
You don't fire. That was their sixth in a row.
Yeah, no, they kind of found their mojo. They waited too long to get last year. They've kind of found it again earlier in the season for once.
Yeah.
So then my last question is, you want to just spend a couple minutes just talking about Victor Oladipo and how great he's been for the first 41 games and how he's basically been the same exact player as Paul George's last season. And that means the Pacers won the Paul George trade.
That means he has been on offense the same player as Paul George. Absolutely. Incredible.
Defensively, they're pretty good.
Yeah, not even close to Paul George, but he's been pretty good. Really, you know, the three-point shooting is what transformed him so much because, you know, I thought he was going to be like a league average guy, and he's in the mid of 40s in percents, which, you know, opens up so much for him in terms of the courts just open. And then he also got shredded and fast and can beat guys off the dribble. So, you know, guys have to guard him literally everywhere and guard him tight, and he can use his speed and beat guys. He's just so impossible to stop, and he's always been able to pass from his distributing it in the Magic, and just in general, his whole career, he's been decent at that. So put it all together, and now he's, you know, one of the most dominant offensive players in the whole league.
All right. So this stat could be completely useless and stupid, but so Paul George's offensive and defensive rating last season with the Pacers, 109, 10, and 108. Victor Oladipo's this year, 113 and 106. I know
that is correct.
Spacing and all that crap and that's whatever, but
kind of,
but that's all. Yeah, no, but I'm just saying, I think he's, I agree, he's definitely not a good defender as George because George can guard LeBron and guys like that. But offensively, he's like slightly better, I think, George's last season. And
Victor Oladipo had to play alongside Monte Ellis. I think his offensive rating would be like 105.
Yeah, I agree with you, probably. I don't know. You know, he made that play against the Heat where he got through three defenders. So, you know, he doesn't hit to the rim with three guys. One question I do have on Vic is there any concern because he is kind of so reckless that he's going to.
Absolutely.
Going to be durable. I kind of thought about that because he takes a lot of hits, falls to the ground a lot. He's young right now, but you see with Westbrook really, he had those meniscus tears, but that's been about three seasons past, and now he's been fine really since, right? He's played now almost three full seasons, I think, in a row.
Yeah, and you know, he had the PRP injections this year, but he barely missed any time. But I think with Depot too, you got to look at his whole career. He's kind of been injury prone, right? Like his rookie year, he played 80 and then 72 and then 72 and then 67. So it's very reasonable to think that he is, you know, his aggression gets him hurt more often than it should.
So he's on pace to what, play 75 if he plays the rest of the season per se? I think
he's missed maybe six. Yeah.
You know, maybe there might be one game he'd take off a night or something like that. I could see that. But I think part of also to sort of be more positive is that he has rebuilt his body, and that's kind of part of staying healthier. I think when you're young and you play at reckless, your body is not as ready for the beatings, but I think he is more prepared this season than he's ever been to take the really grueling beating to be an NBA shooting guard that goes to the rim a lot. You know, he's ready for that. Kind of happened to Westbrook too. He sort of built his body up a little better. Same with, I mean, Curry did it. Once he rebuilt his body, he got a little better. He's a lot better injured, like not being injured as much. So I wonder if that's going to be part of it, but definitely a concern, especially if they're going to play him like they were before he got hurt, like 40 minutes a night. I think that was kind of a wake-up call for McMillan to say, all right, we got to play him like 35 minutes. We got to slow him down. We can't let him play 41 a night because we're going to end up with like a Derrick Rose situation possibly.
Exactly. You know, you saw just James Harden got hurt in meaningless 40-something minute game against the Lakers. So you don't want things like that to happen. But, you know, we don't actually know if durability is a question yet because I don't even still know why this sore knee was a thing. It came out of nowhere, but, you know, if he keeps banging into guys and falling down hard, and it freaks me out every time, and then he ends up being fine. But
yes. So I went to that game on Monday, and so I saw the gif of when he was on the ground. It's a GIF, whatever it is now. It's like a bunch of things. But when he fell first, I thought he was like actually really hurt because he didn't move. I was like sitting on the other side of the court. You know, you just see him on the ground for like a solid 15 seconds. I'm like, oh crap, did he like tear his ACL? Did he fall on his shoulder? Whatever. But that's the kind of thing you just get concerned every time he goes on the ground.
But I didn't put it in there, but at practice, he talked about it. He's like, that's the quietest banker's life's ever been. I could hear myself breathe when I fell because everyone was so scared. They just shut up.
Yeah, everybody was worried because he is the team right now. anything was proven by the five game winning streak is that he is the team. Last midseason question. What's their final record, if you had to guess right now?
I think their second half schedule is a little harder than their first half because of the road trips. So 500 is my guess. I think they're going to finish about 500.
Is that enough to get in the playoffs?
I think it's really close. I don't know. I don't know. The East is way better than we thought. So
I think I agree with you. I think they're going to go 21-20 again. Basically.
Okay, so 42,
and that was the same record as last season, and yeah. That got them in the playoffs, so I got them the 7 seed even last year, and they probably rather have been the 8 seed last season, but that's another gripe with this Pacer team and the Cavs blowing the 1 seed towards the end of the season, but I think they go 42-40. Vic probably wins most improved player of the year. I think he runs away with that award. Right, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Unless I think Giannis, maybe, but I don't know if you give it to Giannis.
Oh, no. Vic would have to, like, not play more than 50 games, I think, to not win it, like, already.
Yeah, so I think he runs away with it. I think McMillan probably ends up in the top five, maybe, for Coach of the Year, just because the team. You don't think he ends up top five?
No. Just because of Vic's improvement, it doesn't look like the team is exceeding expectations because it's, like, a player is playing so far above how they are. Like, I think it's going to be, like, Thibodeau or...
You don't think every NBA writer reads the stories about him playing his guys 41 minutes and then they're not going to vote for him? I think that's ruined him in this league. I mean, I think there's been such a wave of this players need to rest, which is a completely reasonable thing.
And they're right.
That he is getting every city. Anytime you talk about Thibodeau with like any NBA guy on like a podcast, whatever they're talking, they're all like, well, he plays his guy 45 minutes. How long can he play like that? They're all going to get hurt. Like, right. I think there's such a negative connotation to him, but I don't know. The top four is probably going to be Stevens, Popovich, Kerr. I had the fourth one. Oh, it's going to be D'Antoni and the guy Bolstra, in Toronto. Casey.
Wayne Casey. Yeah, they've all been good too.
So maybe he'll be end up top five, but I think he'll get some votes at least. I think maybe he'll get one fifth place vote from like the Indy Star writers.
Jim Aiello, if you're listening.
Does he have a vote? I don't know if he has a vote.
I don't know.
He used to be Nate Taylor, so I don't know who the vote for the Indy Star is now. Maybe that's either. Probably Clifton Brown, so maybe Clifton's going to get it. Whoever it is, we'll probably put him fifth just to be on his good side, right?
Yeah, I hope so. That'd be awesome.
All right, anything else before we get to the team previews?
I got nothing. I'm very excited with how the first half went just because the direction for their future is so much more clear than it was before the season started.
Yeah, I would agree. They have two young guys who can become quality NBA players. They've got a budding superstar, maybe, or at least top 15, top 20 player in Vic, and they got a move to make too. So
you need a superstar to win playoff rounds. You need a really good defensive center to win playoff rounds, and they have both of those. Now the challenge is filling it out around them, but the plan is there, and I'm excited about that.
And with the way cap space is going, and they have another move to make to get another piece in here. So we'll just see I don't know if it's Isaiah Thomas. I don't want to talk about that because I don't think it is, but there's another move to make for the space team to take them to the next kind of level that they could get. You know, maybe, I mean, it may not be this year. It could be 2 years down the road when they have like a ton of cap space, but there's another move they could eventually make because they'll have the cap space to go after some big name players. But we're going to start talking about the team midseason, their midseason review, and we're going to move on to the games they play this weekend. All right, so the Pacers have two games coming up before the weekend, before you hear me and Tony together again, probably next Monday or Tuesday. They play the Cavs on Friday to finish up a four-game homestand. Tony, do you have the Cavs numbers?
I do have the Cavs numbers. They are 15th in pace, 3rd in offense, 27th in defense.
The Pacers are 2-0 against the Cavs. so far they're 2-0 against the Cavs. You said somehow. I'm sorry. Yeah. I didn't hear you right. I'm pulling up the scores, but the first game, they shellacked them in Quicken Loans Arena when the Cavs were struggling to get off the season.
The season by far.
Yeah. I think that game was 124-107.
Yeah.
Then they come back to play them I think the Pacers, they're like 4 or 5 game win streak. Right, was that when they played the Cavs a second time?
Yeah.
But they came back and beat
them. They won all the games.
Yeah, they won all those four of the six home games, right? They lost the end streak, but they beat them 106-102. One of Vic's better, finer moments this season, one of his you know, he had a lot of fine moments, but that was a really good moment in the, I think he had a 20-point third quarter and capped off the game with a crossover step back three over Kevin Love. But the biggest thing going for the Cavs right now is the return of Isaiah Thomas. The Cavs play between now and
right. They're on a back to back. Yeah.
He didn't get suspended. He only got fined, right?
Yeah, he only got fined. $20,000. Yeah, they just like the Heat, are in Toronto the night before they come to Indiana.
Well, it doesn't seem to do anything for these teams. So. and that seems odd. Well, because Toronto's a tough team to play. I mean, they're a good team, and they I don't know why the Heat played so well tonight. It seems shocking, but
the focus should be Isaiah Thomas, because we kind of know what the Cavs are from A, playing them twice, and B, them having literally the same flipping roster every year. Their only addition is Dwayne Wade, and we've seen him play twice.
Yeah, but he's been playing better too. He really has.
With the second unit, he's been great.
But the Cavs have also lost five of their last seven games, so they're not like playing incredibly well. But especially without Miles Turner, which will probably be the biggest reason if they lose this game, they lose it, because when you play LeBron James, the best thing you can do to counter him is have a really good rim protector. And then without Turner, they don't have any of that, because Sabonis cannot match Turner's ability to block shots at the rim, not even close, right?
Yeah. Well, and IT too. IT's a really good attacker. That's his thing.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be a struggle, honestly, for the Pacers.
I do too.
Just because, without, you know, they're going to have to play so well on the offensive end, which they could, because the Cavs played pretty much horrendous D. I mean, I think they're playing better of late, but, you know, the team we saw the first attempts played horrendous D, so we take them. But
hey, back to Indiana. LeBron's not going to play, right?
Oh, I didn't think about that. You know what? He might just not play.
He never plays.
But so they'll have to come up with some reasonable excuse, like he has an ankle injury or like something. But you know what? The question is, will they look at it and say, we need to beat the Pacers because we haven't beat them yet, and they're out their second best player, so we should play LeBron.
Yeah. You know
what I mean, I think if the Pacers had lost the previous two times, they would look at them like, oh, we don't care. But I think there might be something in LeBron's head where he's like, I want to beat this Pacer team because they beat me twice, and that kind of humiliated me the first time, and Vic got the best of me the second time. So I need to show my, you know, why I'm the best player in the world. I think there's some of that in LeBron. But who's your X factor for the Pacers? I mean, it's probably Turner not playing, but who has to have?
Yeah, without Turner, Sabonis becomes the X factor in a lot of these games, because he's going to be matched up on Kevin Love, who is going to be great at sucking him away from the rim. And, you know, he can shoot a lot. He's going to bang you in on the rebounds. So it's a lot of stuff that Sabonis is going to have to work hard to play well. And if he does play well, then they might have a chance to be in the game. And if he doesn't, they're sunk.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Do you think he'll be able to get some offensive points off of Love, right? He'll be able to score, you know.
Yeah, the pick and roll will work.
And he'll be able to do some of his little spin move type stuff around the rim around Love. But Love's got kind of long arms, so he's not terrible at sort of just kind of being in the way somewhat. But yeah, they're going to have to win this. Sabonis has to win this. Everybody's got to win their matchup, basically, except for basically Bojan. He's going to lose it to LeBron, but they have to win every other matchup. And I don't know if Collison can beat Isaiah Thomas. I don't know if he can.
Yeah, I don't know either. But I do say this is a random pro. The way Tristan Thompson plays, Al Jefferson could actually be okay against him.
Because yeah, I do agree with that.
Can't come away from the rim at all. So maybe Al won't be useless in this game, which could be pretty nice too.
The thing about Al is he plays, he has to score 6 to 8 points for him to be any kind of value on the court. If he doesn't score more that many points, he's just out there.
If he's not hitting half his shots, he's useless. He completely.
Yeah. Yeah. And if they don't give him because he has some moves to still score. Like he's not a great scorer anymore, like he was in his prime, but he has some moves where he can get to the rim and bank it off the glass a little bit. You set it up in the right like back down situation. He can make a little 12-foot jumper if he's given it in the right spot. So you have to really play his strengths if he's going to play. Like you have to really set him up in good spots, but they're not great at setting up centers, so I don't know if they're going to be able to do that.
Yeah, I don't either. But your butcher, is it LeBron James? Is it Isaiah Thomas? Is it Kevin Love? Is it someone else?
It's Isaiah Thomas.
Mine is also Isaiah Thomas.
Because LeBron's going to get his. LeBron gets his every game. LeBron gets his 30 and 10 and 8 a game, whatever he is averaging, close to that right now. Probably the MVP at this point because Harden got hurt. But he is
the MVP either way.
Okay, whatever. I don't know. We're only halfway through this season. A lot can happen.
Right, right.
We know Milwaukee goes 30 and 10 the last season. Giannis put that out of his mind. But Isaiah Thomas, I think he's still on a minute restriction. Maybe probably will be close to being off it by the time they play on Friday. But if he goes for somewhere between 20 and 30, I think they're going to lose. I think if they hold him under into the teens, they have a shot at winning.
Yeah, he's averaging 15 a game right now, but only playing, I can't do math, a little under 20 minutes a game. So that's pretty crazy that he's able to score that much. He's just really efficient. He can get to the rim whenever he wants. He's so good. But it's going to be interesting, like I said, with LeBron getting held out, you know, IT's recently off an injury too on a back-to-back. You know, who knows who's going to play on this old Cleveland team who doesn't even care about the regular season. But if he does play, he's definitely my butcher.
Yeah, I think if IT doesn't play, they also have just as good of a shot. Not, I mean, if LeBron doesn't play, they can win this game. But if IT doesn't play, they have a pretty decent shot because I don't know. There's just not anything else but LeBron out there. And you can let LeBron get his 40 and just hope he stops everybody else, which they kind of did last time. Basically, LeBron, I think LeBron had 30 in the last time they played or close to it. So that's the opportunity. Do you want to do scores at the end of the podcast or do you want to do it now?
Yeah, yes.
So you want to do scores right now?
No, let's. Oh, I said yes to an or question. I tried to interrupt you in the middle. I would like to do them both at the end.
Okay, so then let's move on to their next matchup against the Phoenix Suns. Do you have the Phoenix Suns numbers up?
I always have the numbers up. I forgot one time. Anyway, they are fourth in pace, 27th in offense, and 29th in defense, which is a terrible combo. But they really play really fast.
Yeah, they don't play a good fast, but they play fast.
They do play fast. But a big thing for them is Isaiah Kanan, who was playing really well for them, so well that they cut Mike James. He's hurt, and he was about to miss a week to 10 days. That was on the 4th, so that's going to be really close if he plays or not. Marquise Chris with a hip injury might not play. Who knows if he's going to play against the Rockets Friday. Brandon Knight's out for the season. Devon Reed is out. Allen Williams is out. So they only have 10 guys plus two ways that could even play, and they're already pretty bad. So this could be a nice little easy win.
Yeah, I think without Turner, they could still take him, right? I've been most impressed by TJ Warren, actually, on this team.
I like TJ Warren.
So I snagged him up in fantasy a couple, like probably a month ago, just because he was playing decent. And so I think he actually is like close to the top in fantasy right now. Like he's
TJ Warren is scoring 19.6 points a game, shooting 52% from 2-point range, which is his MO. He never shoots threes. It's not his thing. He's a professional scorer. That's his role.
So he's right now in my fantasy league top 10 in total points.
Wow.
So that's just doesn't mean much for the actual how he plays, but he's been playing really great of late too. I've been impressed by him. I think he's kind of the spot where the Pacers will get exploited because there'll be Bojan guarding him, and I don't think Bojan guards anybody that well. And Warren's got some size over him. And then Booker will probably get his. I wonder, I guess, maybe Vic will guard Warren, and they'll play Bojan on Booker because I'm not sure they want Vic to guard the best guy on the team. But we'll see how that goes. But I think this is a pretty easy like game, and they should win this one, right?
Yeah, unless Booker just goes off, I think they won't have trouble with that one.
Remember, Booker scored 70 points one time and they didn't win.
He did. That is true. He can go off and he's really good, man. He's a pretty underrated player. He's almost at 40% 3-point shooting. He's a shot creator who can knock down shots, and he's only 21 years old. Yeah, he's a year
young.
He's a good player, man.
He just needs that number two, and then that team will take off. Yeah. He probably needs like one of those three guys to get drafted at the top, or maybe even DeAndre.
And he also needs someone better than Tyler Ulis starting next to him.
Yeah, but I think the Suns are one of those teams where they're kind of in tank mode, and when they finally get back, they'll figure out how to find a point guard to fit. And maybe it's Trae Young. Maybe Trae Young's the guy that plays next year.
That'd be dope.
that would probably make them vault them into one of the most fun teams. And
I would watch them a lot if they were Trae Young, Booker, Warren. I would watch a lot.
It would make them like the young Warriors, basically. They'd be like the next version of the Warriors. That's what they'd be called. I'm almost certain of it. So that'd be fun to watch. So that could be, but besides him, they don't have much going for them.
And he's my butcher. I'll just do that now.
Yeah, I would agree. I think TJ Warren is my butcher. I think still.
Ooh. Okay.
But just because Warren seems to be getting his, like, he's recently, he had like 31, 28, and he's just been getting his, it seems like, every night. You know, he didn't play Oklahoma, but then he had 23 his last game he played. It's Oklahoma City. He's just getting his points. And he scored 23, presumably on Paul George, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think, you know, he'll get his 20, and Booker will get his 25, and Pacers will hopefully get 30 from Vic and that'll be it. Yeah, Vic, get 30 from Vic. Maybe they can finally find a 3-point shot in Phoenix. But it's important to win this game on Sunday because they play back-to-back. So they need to win on Sunday because they're probably going to lose in Utah like they usually do every single year.
Yeah, and Thad's going to be so crucial in this one because their power forwards are horrible. Marquise Chris, Dragon Bender. Sometimes they play Monroe and Chandler together. They just do – that's their weakest position. So, Thad, do your thing.
Yeah, and I think Darren Collison's going to have a big game.
Yeah. Tyler Ulis is so short. He's so short.
And actually, this is also another team that theoretically Al Jefferson could play against if they give any minutes to Tyson Chandler.
They play Tyson Chandler a lot. Yeah. He plays over half the game. Yeah.
I know. That's what I mean. If I assume they're going to play him. So if they play, when they play him, this is the kind of game where there'll be a tradition. This will be a really throwback to a Chandler versus Al Jefferson match, like out of the straight out of 2010, basically. Think about it.
That'd be funny.
Yeah. No, actually, yeah. I'm already thinking of tweets for that when that happens.
Good. Right. Light them up.
Yeah. So we both, I mean, my X factor is Vic. I said it. You said your X factor is Young.
Yep.
Collison could be another one. Those are probably the three guys to watch. And then butcher wise, we said Booker and Warren. Let's do some scores. So what is your score for the Cavs game?
I think the Cavs are going to win. I think they just had too much star power. The only way the Pacers win, I think, is if someone's sitting out. I think the Cavs are going to win probably by 12 or 15. I don't think it's even going to be close.
I think the Cavs win too, but I think they only win by 8. So let's say 103-95.
Okay.
I think I agree with the Cavs. If somebody doesn't play on the Cavs, they can win. I just don't. I mean, the Cavs are they're a better team, but they're not like they still have to play a lot of old guys who are just not that good.
Exactly. So, yeah.
But the Pacers could also shoot one for 18 from three, and that could be it. That's how they'll lose that game for sure. I'll go first for the Suns.
Okay. Okay.
I think Pacers win this one pretty easily. 112 to 100.
Okay, I think they're going to win by more.
They never blow out teams by that much. They never end up winning by that much, except for the Bulls game. They beat the Bucks by 30, being up by like 30 at one point.
The Heat, the Bulls, and Magic are their only three like blowouts all year.
But they blew out the Bucks, really, but they only won by 13 because they let the team come back late a little bit. Like, not that much, but a little bit.
I'm going to say they beat the Suns by 20, 118-98.
All right. That's not a bad score. I think we're going to be back on Monday, right?
Yeah. Well, tomorrow will be hopefully practice stuff with I don't even know what else I can talk about for a Cavs preview. Probably just how they can change stuff from other games. And then Sunday will be with Gerald Borgetz. I don't know how to say his last name. I need to figure that out. But he will be the Suns guy to come on and tell you more about the Suns. We can preview those games a little better.
All right. What are you writing? I mean, you're writing every day, so it was small forward Wednesday, right, today?
Yes, today was about Bojan's inconsistency, which we talked about on here, and from month to month especially, you know, why I think the changes are happening, what they can do to fix it tomorrow for power forward Thursdays, probably try to get some Poythress or some TJ Leaf in there, try to get all the guys some love.
Yep, and Tony will probably go to the practice. Hopefully his boss will let him out and go to the practice tomorrow, which will be his third practice, which might unlock the secret to getting a press pass, which would be kind of cool. Is that kind of access? So we'll have good sound for that on Friday, presumably, for the Cavs preview. Anything else you want to hit on, Tony, before we wrap up today's show?
I've had a fun first half of the season. I hope you guys are enjoying us.
I would say this is an above expectations team so far, despite some frustrations at times. This team is playing at a level I think nobody saw coming, so they can keep it up through the next 41 games. Some all-star stuff coming up. Keep voting Vic, I guess. NBA vote Vic. Hashtag NBA vote.
Be on the lookout this week for a two-way contract signing also.
Yep, and be looking out for the next couple weeks. Some slight, maybe a patient make a move. I don't know if they will. Trade deadline is February 8th, but we'll, of course, be back with you next Monday or Tuesday, together as always for our weekly show. That's it for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. Have a great rest of your day. We'll be right back.